First and foremost, I did just get back from Everest. The trip that I went on was actually a qualifying trip for the big climb of Everest. So the main one where I wanted to touch the summit was supposed to be happening this April. So I had to go away to Everest. I had to climb two mountains over 6,200 meters, which was fine. I've been doing the training. For those of you who don't know, the higher up you get, the less oxygen there is in the air, the harder it is to breathe. So 6,200, that's pretty high. Everest is 8,800, so it's a little bit higher. But I went over with the intention that I was going to qualify, I was going to climb these two mountains, come home. The whole way I was like, God, open doors, closed doors. If you're in it, back me. If you're not in it, if I'm not right, don't back me. You know, I don't care that much about doing it. You just call the shots. So I went over there and I was feeling good, really adapted to the altitude super well. I was starting to climb up, the oxygen was thin, but I was feeling really strong, which was good. And it came to the very first qualifying climb. I had to climb 6,200 meters. You start at 1 a.m. in the morning because of the fact that the ice up the mountain is really, really hard in the morning. The sun hasn't come out to melt it. So I got up about 12:30 and I had a drink of water in Nepal, obviously. So you have to be really careful with the water you're drinking, the food you're eating. About half an hour after I ate, I said to my guide, I said, man, I feel a bit off. And he goes, oh, you're just nervous, it's okay. But you know what, I'm probably just nervous. And as we started walking, I said, oh man, I feel really off. He's like, it's okay, you're nervous, it's fine, it's normal. I go, no, you don't understand, like, I'm going to be sick. And he's like, oh, this is no good. So I put off the side of the path, and I was like a good sick. You know how you have those moments where you're like a little bit sick, and then you're good sick? I was in the good sick category. And I knew that I had to climb up this mountain to qualify, so I kept pushing. It was about 9 hours worth of climbing. About 4 hours in, after 3.5 more hours of just vomiting and vomiting and good vomiting, my guide said to me, he goes, Tyce, mate, you can't go, like, you're going to kill yourself. And you know when you're trying to have a big hero moment, like you think of all the hard work you put in, you think of all the effort that's gone into it, all the money that you put into it, and anything, I can't just fail you. I was in that moment, but you know when you're so sick you can't focus, he said, Tyce, you're coming down the mountain. Before I knew it, I had like an arm over each of one of my guide's shoulders and I was walking back down the mountain, and that was game over. So I've been trying to claim this Everest title, but I feel like I need to fess up. I feel like I have to get the slate clean with you right now. I didn't climb it yet. However, please feel free to keep telling people I did, because it makes me sound so much more impressive when I come up here. And when I have to come up and confess the fact that I actually vomited halfway up the mountain and couldn't climb it, I feel like it's a really anti-climax. So I'm just gonna put that out there as a foundation. And with that as a foundation, I feel like we can only go up from there now. Does that make sense? Is that alright? It's super cool to be here, but I've been here maybe 5 or 6 times now. I feel like I put it this way, I was saying, this is my favourite kitchen. This is my favourite kitchen. I don't know who I was saying to before, I said it to a couple of people, but I said, it's my favourite kitchen. She goes, are you being sarcastic? I go, no, dead serious. I'm like, I love this place. Every time I leave here, I'm excited. I don't know, it's so raw. Don't you reckon just coming here and you got a normal lights and you got a fan that squeaks and you come here and just chill, but you're still just singing to God and you're singing loud and proud and you're all up and about. There's not been a time where I haven't left this place really excited. There hasn't been a time where I haven't left this place really up and about. Even when I come in here feeling flat, I always leave feeling like I got a little bit more, feeling like someone else bigger, better, stronger than me is in control. And I hope that after this talk, just a brief talk tonight, that you guys can walk away thinking maybe there's something bigger, better, stronger, more powerful in your life, regardless of what it is you're going through. I used to work at City Life Church. I was a youth pastor there for 2.5 years. I actually left mid last year because of the training for Everest, because of the work and stuff that was going into it. But I've just stepped out and made a real passion of my job. And I'm speaking at schools all around Australia, just like what I'm doing here on the topic of mindset and performance. I work really close one-on-one with athletes and just trying to help them get to a new level in their thinking. Not only with athletes, but there's so many people going through depression and anxiety and stress and just a whole heap of little mental states that they've got themselves into and feel as though they're stuck. I've been there before, so I know how hard it is. So I really try and speak to that person and offer techniques and strategies, simple ones that can have an automatic shift in the way they think, not only about themselves, but about the world around them. Apart from that, I spend a little bit of time in schools. I've been working as a CRT, a sub teacher, one of those ones who comes in when your teacher's away, and I just come and chill with the students. And I've been doing that for the last 2 weeks since school's gone back, and I actually had a conversation with a kid just last week, and it really got me thinking about what I wanted to speak with you all about tonight. You see, he just started year six. And I went in and I was excited. I said, man, how you doing? He's like, good. But you know when someone says good, but their face says terrible? It was one of those ones. He was really bad at covering up. I said, are you really good? He pretty much just teared up. He's like, I'm not good. I said, man, what's the matter? And he's like, oh, my friends have changed this year. I was like, what do you mean they've changed this year? He's like, they're all cool. Okay, you're pretty cool. And he's like, no, but they're acting super cool. And he's like, they're not that cool, but they think they're cool. And now I don't know where I stand. And I go, mate, if you're trying that hard to act cool, your friends aren't that cool, don't worry about it. And he's like, no, but you don't, Mr. Pop, last name's Popplestone. Mr. Pop, what do you mean? He goes, I just feel like I can't be myself anymore. And I felt real sad for the kid, because I've been there before. I remember being in school, and there's always these funny changes, isn't there, when you're growing up and you go into a new group or a new school, or when you start high school and your friends start to try and put on that big, I'm new, tough kid act. We all know it. I see a couple of nods already. I know it as well. And it got me thinking about it. I mean, I knew I was going to come and talk to the youth tonight, and I wanted to bring you something that was powerful, that was relevant, that was helpful. And as I left this kid, I thought, man, just, I wonder how many other kids are going through what you've gone through. I wonder how many other kids feel as though they can't be themselves because they're scared about what the group's going to think. Oh, I wonder how many people start doing things they wouldn't usually do because of the fact that they're trying to fit into a group that's changing, not for the better, for the worse, and they feel uncomfortable. They feel like they're the one with the problem. So as a bit of a foundation, I want to lay that out there for the next few minutes. That's what I'm going to speak about. But before I kick that off, do you mind if I pray for you guys? That would be awkward if you said no. No one's ever said no in that situation. And I think even if you did, I'll just go for it. Let me pray. Hey, Lord, I thank you for the opportunity to come and share with these guys again tonight. Lord, whatever they're going through, depression, anxiety, anything that they feel like they're alone in, I pray that after tonight, Lord, you would allow them to see that they're not alone. That even if they feel alone, there's ways out. That even if they feel alone, there's strength in that moment. That as they look back in the future, they might realize that this is not just a moment where their lives were crumbling, but in fact where you were strengthening their lives in a way that wouldn't be possible without that, Lord. So I commit that to you in Jesus' name. Amen. It was really cool last year when I got to Everest because I'm a massive documentary fan. That's like my way of travelling when I've got no money. I watch a documentary, and I'd only ever seen Everest in documentaries, and I was so into it. Anyone who you speak to ask a question about me, they say, oh, documentaries. They say, Tyson, documentary. All my mates know I love it. I don't know what it is. I just find it really interesting getting into other people's worlds, finding out what's going on. But one of the craziest documentaries I've ever seen, check this out. This is, no one believes me, but this is a fact. I'm even going to send you the link later if you really want it. One of my favourite documentaries was about this Russian chick who about 20 years ago was found. She had been abandoned by her parents, 20 years prior to that. So she was about 20 when she was found, if my math serves me correctly. She was dumped by her parents on the side of the road. This is what was told about it. But somehow, 20 years after that moment she was put on the side of the road, she was found with a wild dog pack. Now check this out. Yeah, that was my face too. Like, she was found with this wild dog pack. And what was crazy about it though was she was found acting like one of these dogs. It was mental. So they found her and she started barking at the people that found her. And the guy that found her was like, you're not a dog. The guy was like, your hands, you're hurt. She was running around on all fours like she was a dog. She was eating food off the ground like she was a dog. These guys were tripping out. The guys that found her couldn't understand. Like, what the heck is this chick acting like a dog for? Yeah, maybe one day we don't know her story, but she was barking. In her head, she was a full Maltese Shih Tzu. Or probably something more aggressive. That's a terrible example for me. A German Shepherd. These dogs look vicious. I've got a Maltese Shih Tzu. It's a little cheap white thing that looks like a bubble. She wasn't hanging around dogs that look like a bubble. It was like a big angry bubble, if it was. It turns out, over time, this chick, she got welcomed back into the community slowly. After a couple of years of being back in the community, they said to her, they said, hey, do you see how strange that was? And she was like, yeah, that was ridiculous. And the guy goes, "What? Why were you living there in those conditions? What was it about that?" And I think her answer was absolutely profound, and I see it's sort of relevant in today's day and age. She said, "You know what? At that time, I don't know how I got there, but those dogs were the only ones that ever welcomed me in. They were the only ones that ever accepted me. I didn't really spend time with any other humans. I didn't have a lot of human interaction. I just saw the way these dogs did it, and they seemed to love towards me. And I thought, if they love towards me, then maybe this is where my purpose is found." And it tripped me out, because though the initial response to that story was me going, "You're not a dog." When she explained what it was that made her act like one, I felt for her. And I felt for her because the story that she told was the story that this young year six kid was telling me last week. "I just want to be accepted." He said to me, he goes, "I just want to be accepted." And he goes, "My friends are acting a certain way, and now I feel like I have to act a certain way in order to fit in with my friends. Because I'm doing things I don't want to do, I'm saying things I don't want to say." He's like, "But when I do it, my friends think I'm cool, and without those friends, I'm by myself." And it trips me out because I think back to my own younger days. I remember so clearly, don't judge me, I was 10 years old, very naughty little boy. I was hanging with my friend, his name was Brady, we were in Western Australia. This kid had a bad reputation. He was a bit naughty, but I liked him because I always seemed to like the naughty ones. So me and Brady, we went out to a motorbike track, and this is not advice, this is just a story. I've got better sense here, this is not an excuse for me to do it. Because I can see kids' faces lighting up going, "I'm going to do it." I don't even know what to give, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it twice, and better. Don't do it, because I'll never get invited back. We went out into this big, massive field. There was heaps of acres. I don't even know how we got there. It was ridiculous. In the middle of the field, we saw this old, dingy, terrible truck. It was, in our 10-year-old eyes, it was never used before. It was never used before. It was never going to be used again. So my friend goes to me, "Hey, Tice, let's smash its windows." And I go, "Brady, that's ridiculous. That's so naughty." He goes, "Oh, you're too scared?" I was like, "A little bit. A little tiny bit." He goes, "If you want to be in this group, if you want to be cool, you want to be able to hang out with me, you're going to have to do some naughty stuff." And I said, "Oh, okay." So he picked up a rock and smashed its window. And in my head, it wasn't that bad because I thought, no one's ever going to use this truck again. So I picked up a rock and I started throwing. He's like, "Yeah, see, it's easy, isn't it? It's not as hard as you think." And I was like, "Yeah, it's actually, that felt pretty good." He goes, "Man, let's do a few." So we were there for about 15 minutes and I would never act like this usually. But then as we were standing there, I was about to throw another rock. I saw this car driving down the paddock, and I was thinking, "Oh no," but like a lot naughtier version of "oh no," like words you can't say "oh no" in church kind of thing. This guy pulled up right next to us, and he goes, "Hey, what are you doing to my truck?" And I sort of pointed at Brady, and he pointed at me, and I go, "This is your idea," and he goes, "I'm so sorry, this is my friend, I didn't want to do it." He goes, "I'm so sorry, my friend, he made me do it." I go, "That's not what happened. I'm just doing this because I want to try and fit in with your group." He's like, we started blaming each other, but what I realized looking back at that is just like this chick tried to fit in with the dogs by doing things that they did, I was trying to fit in with my mate by doing naughty things that he wanted to do. Though he blamed me, he was the influence. I don't care what he said. And tonight, I want to spend just a little bit of time thinking about the Bible verse, Proverbs 30:20, which says, "Those who hang with the wise will become wise, but those who hang with fools will become fools." Because it's true, isn't it? We all want to fit into a group. We all have a group. We all know that feeling of having friends who change around certain people. We all know that feeling of having friends who are different, who are mean, who are nasty, or who are happy, who are joyful, who are confident when they're around other people. And isn't it hard when we've got friends like that to look at them and know how to act? We just want to fit in and not have to not be ourselves to do so. I remember one of the most awkward conversations I had with my best mates about 5 years ago. We had just started going to uni, and as we got to uni, I started noticing a few changes. He started to hang out with that real footy kind of guy, the Aussie, sarcastic, big, tough, I'm a hero sort of guy. Anyway, he started coming back to me, and as we started to hang out, we used to have a real positive relationship, all up and about, but as he started to come back from these guys, he used to start giving me a hard time, putting me down, swearing at me a little bit, and what I used to love about this guy was so uplifting. I realized that I started to feel like I had to act a certain way, be a certain way, just to impress him. And after about 2 or 3 months of this, I was living with him at the time, I said, man, I've got to talk to you. I said, I feel a little bit like we're bringing each other down. I feel as though I'm trying to act a certain way to fit into your crew. I said, I'm not that confident to act that way because I don't feel like I'm being myself. I feel like I'm ripping you off. And he goes, man. He goes, I'm so sorry. He goes, I think, to be honest, he goes, I think I was just being a little bit nervous. Maybe I was a bit sensitive, lacking a bit of confidence. I've been influenced in a way that I probably shouldn't have been influenced. I've started to act like these guys I want to impress, and I'm bringing that back to you. What was crazy about that was from that moment on, from speaking it out, we've never been more natural around each other. We've never been more comfortable to be ourselves, just to chill, just to be able to say what it is that's on our mind, on our hearts with each other. Our friendship's got so much stronger because of that. You see, I felt like I had to change the way I was being, but then I started to think, if I'm only doing what I'm doing to stop being rejected, is it really worth it? If I was only doing what I was doing to stop being rejected, was it really worth it? Was it worth not being myself so someone else would think highly of me? Then what it would be to be myself and be left out from the group? If I was only being accepted by doing what was expected, then did it really matter if I was rejected? I guess was the poem that I just created just then for you, but it sort of makes sense. If I'm just doing what's expected so that I'm accepted, does it really matter if I get rejected? I mean, I look at Jesus and I think he's the ultimate example of that little catchphrase, that little rap, that little white kid gangster rap that I just made up then. But if you lay the track behind, it sounds so much better. Seriously, put that together later and send it to me. I always run a couple of mixtapes to show my mates how much of a gangster I am. I thought that just proved it. You see, Jesus, in the Bible, we hear so many stories about this guy, about the way he acted, about the crowd that he hung with, about the rough crew that he hung with. I mean, anyone who spent some time reading the Bible will realize that the religious people at that time didn't necessarily like the crew that Jesus hung out with, did they? I mean, a lot of the time, this religious crew would come up to Jesus and go, man, if you say you're so holy, why is it that you're hanging out with a group like this? Why is it that you're hanging out with the outcasts, the people who are frowned upon, the people who aren't accepted in their community anymore? What I love about Jesus was he never changed the way he was just to fit into a group. I mean, he never went around just with this belief that I'm the Son of God, but when he wanted to be friends with a religious crew, go, actually, no, I'm not. I'm just another religious dude. This guy always stuck to this central thing within his heart because he believed that if he was only doing what was expected, so he didn't get rejected, that really wasn't worth it. I mean, he seemed to be this GPS to a group. It was as though he went into a group and the crowd that was around him, though they asked questions and pointed fingers and gave him a really hard time about the way that his character was and about the claims that he was making, about the things that he was teaching, this guy didn't change. In fact, so often, not always, the people that he was around were the ones that were influenced. Though they didn't like necessarily the way he was acting, it was as though he had a message that was so much greater than him, that regardless of what the people around him were saying, he would not change just to be accepted because he knew that what he had was so much more powerful than what that group was trying to throw upon him. It was as though he was a light in that situation. It was as though he was the GPS, and these guys, though they were pointing in other directions, he knew where it was he was going. And regardless of how much trouble, how much hate, how much difficulty he experienced while he was working this earth, he would not sway from what he knew. And just for the next couple of minutes, I wanted to think about that. I wanted to unravel that, delve into it a little bit, because I think if we can grasp this idea that Jesus seemed to grasp, if we can grasp the confidence that comes from the message of Jesus into our own lives, maybe the fact that we are rejected from a group would not become such a big problem, because they have rejected us based on the fact they don't like us, yet we know this message is so much more powerful, so much more free, so much greater than anything else that these groups can say about us. Is that making sense? And with that in mind, I mean, how does that apply to us in 2016? Some of us at school, some of us at uni, some of us at work. What does that mean to us? Where are you guys right now? I mean, I know some of you have just started school, you've gone into a new school, you've started a new grade, and you've noticed this exact thing that I'm speaking about. You've gone into your career and you know, man, I've got friends like that. And they've changed, and not for the better. They've changed in a way that started to say, if you don't like the way I am, you can't be in this group. They've changed in a way that points a finger at you and says, unless you become like me, you're not going to become my friend anymore. And you're in this tension going, man, what do I really want? I know what I believe, and I know my passions, my desires, my dreams, my goals. But these people are saying, unless I act like this, which is completely the opposite of how I would usually act, I'm not going to be accepted anymore. But my question to you, if you're only doing what's expected to be accepted, does it really matter? If you're rejected, let me tell you this, Jesus, with his message, with his hope, with his dream, with his vision that he was passing, was rejected time and time again. But when you know what it is that's driving you, regardless of what it is that this crowd says, to try and make you form into the nature that they've taken upon, you no longer feel compelled to do that because you know what's in you is so much greater. You, in fact, become a light in that situation. You become a GPS. It's as though you start guiding a path, and after time, it might not be immediate. People are going to notice changes. People are going to notice that there's something about you. I know this because it's happened first time for me. I was the ultimate guy of conforming to a group. When I was at school, I was about that tall in year 12. It was really, well, not that tall, but I was pretty close to. Like, that probably would have been like the top of my leg. So I was that tall. I was little. And I always felt like the cool guys at school had a say on how it was that I had to act. And I used to always conform because for me, impress a girl at that time was the ultimate thing. And I hadn't had much success at that time. That's why I got married so quick when I met my wife, who was a babe, and she seemed to love me. I said, please just marry me. She goes, okay. And I sealed the deal right there and then, because before that time, I did not think the fact that I could have a hot wife was possible, but I did it. But that's a side note, and I've just got sidetracked. But let me say that. That was me just trying to subtly drop the fact that I have a hot wife, and I hope you see a photo of her. I'm going to bring one in next time. So I said, hey, don't get distracted. Let's focus on this minute about Jesus. Stop thinking about my wife all the time. Anyway, Jesus has this ultimate example, and he seems to dictate where his group goes. He seems to have a confidence that despite what everyone around him is saying, he knows where it is he needs to be, where he wants to go, where it is he's walking, despite how they're seeing him, he will change that. And I was saying before you started talking about my wife that so many of us are in school right now going through all this, and yet we think that, oh man, only if we get older and we get more used to this kind of thing, then we'll be able to deal with it. But the fact is, this feeling doesn't disappear with age. In fact, anyone who's over the age of 19, 18, whatever, finished school, they'll be able to guarantee that this thing does not disappear when school finishes. In fact, it's something that's relevant to us always. Even still, I continually catch myself around people I admire and respect. And though they're not doing it on purpose, I find myself conforming, and I continually come back and say, Tice, are you just doing this so that you can be accepted? Because you don't agree with their lifestyle, you don't agree with the things they're doing. In fact, you've got an outlook, you know where it is you want to be heading. Do not get sidetracked by simply trying to conform. And I mean, how does that apply to you in 2016? Where is it? Because I know that we're all in a situation where, when we really stop and think about the people around us, we can really honestly, within ourselves at least, notice how easy it is to get sidetracked. Notice how easy it is to get torn off this path. Notice how easy it is for our light that shines so brightly within us to be dimmed. Because isn't that true? Each and every one of you has a passion, has a dream, a goal, a desire, a longing. It's as though you know that something's been placed on the inside of you for something far greater than you can possibly put into words. It's as though you know there's something within you that can change the face of this planet, can change the lives of those around you. And it's as though in those moments, a limit gets placed on those dreams, on those desires, because you're simply conforming, you're not following that dream, that passion, that goal, that God-given desire, that life that's been placed within you. I mean, just for the last couple of minutes before we break off and just spend some time in prayer around this particular subject, I wanted to throw this back. I wanted to leave you with this image, this idea that we are called the light bearers. You see, the awkward thing about light is regardless of how dark the room it's in, you always see the light. If you're in a dark room and there's a candle lit, the candle can't hide. unless you hide it behind something. You know what I mean? An open room, dark space, candles at the other end. You cannot hide it. You see, God says to us that within us is a light that cannot be turned off. But it seems as though in the moments of us being in this situation of trying not to conform, that light at least gets covered up a little bit. We lose sight of where it's at and we start to believe that maybe, in fact, that light is no longer there. Those dreams and things within us no longer have a place to flourish. I think one of the most powerful things is so often when we get used to coming into a church situation, we forget is that this message is not just something that we have to learn and know for the sake of it. This message is something we have to learn and know because it's the truth about you, it's the truth about me, and within it is so much power that can change your life and the lives of those around you when that light is switched on. Though the group that you're around may not like the direction that that leads you in, they'll notice that there's something within you that is strong and firm and is rock and foundation, and they wish they had it, because isn't it true that we're all looking for satisfaction, we're all looking for peace, we're all looking for a place just to be okay with ourselves, and that can take on so many different forms. The form of me throwing a rock at a truck to try and impress my friend, the form of me trying to impress my friends at high school by acting a certain way, talking a certain way, the form of me just conforming. But what is so much more powerful is when we are so firm in who we are, in God and the message and that light that is placed within us, that we can stand firm regardless of the tension around us. And so maybe this week's been a little bit tough for you. Maybe it's been one of those weeks where you're like, man, I'm not going to go back to school on Monday. How am I going to go back to my job on Monday? How am I going to go back to uni after how much trouble I had, after how much of a fool I made of myself? And this message is for you specifically. This message is for everyone in this room who feels this sense of tension, who has a dream and wants it to flourish but feel as though it's him. He said the coolest thing about God is he does not call us just to perfection. He calls us to a strength within him which starts to look a little bit better through our character the further on we get. But he's not just after good looks. He's after a firm foundation. He's after a strength. He's after a light. You've got to God within you. I genuinely believe with all my heart that a massive transformation of lives of people around us starts right here in this room. This is almost like the little meeting for the revolutionaries. This is where people get together to be reminded that there's something far bigger going on within you, regardless of what people have said about you, the way they've spoken about you, the way they've changed your name, the way they've put you down, the way they've bagged you behind your back. There is something far greater that can never be turned off, and that is what I want you to leave here with confidence in. So as you step into wherever it is you go next week, know that you're alive. And when you're sleeping, not everyone loves to see a light. So people aren't always going to agree with the way that you're operating. But still, you shine. And you bring what it is that you got, the situation that you're in, and I promise you. That's so much more powerful than what it is that those groups that are trying to conform, they're trying to make you act like. If you're only doing what you're doing to be accepted, it doesn't matter if you're rejected. As we finish up, let me just pray for you guys, because I honestly believe that there's people in here that this is just hitting a space that's so relevant, so big. It's been a tough week. Hey, Lord, just I want to pray for the specific individual who is hearing this, Lord, maybe even a few, just hit a spot. I pray that as we go into our situations that we find ourselves in next week, that you may give us confidence in the fact that you've placed something so great within us, and though some people may not like it, that you've called us to something far bigger than spinning the crowd. Lord, I lift up those people to you. I pray that you've worked through them, shined through them, and given them confidence in what it is that you've offered them, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, guys.